views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Sir, you're ready to rock and roll?
Yeah.
All right. So, tonight's episode, we're going to be discussing the illusion of perception and getting to some concepts as far as their effect on people's perception, the creation of these concepts, their maintenance, and their ultimate goal. There are a number of things that go into that, but one being how the use of language figures largely into the control of perception and perhaps ways in which one can begin to question one's own perception and its realities. So, fellas, I know we've, the last 2 weeks, we've done a lot that has been going on, and we've shared a lot of information back and forth, a lot of great information. But was there anything that you all wanted to say in regards to, you know, current events before we kind of get into tonight's topic?
Well, the first thing that I would like to do to kind of like just kind of give everything its context is I like to read off the Webster's definition for illusion and then perception. To kind of set the table for what the English language gives and defines as the concepts that we're going to be describing today. So illusion, the definition for illusion is, illusion is a noun. And the first definition that shows up is something that deceives by producing a false or misleading impression of reality. The number two definition is the state or condition of being deceived or misapprehension. And I would like to read the perception definition since we're talking about both simultaneously. Perception is the act or faculty of perceiving or apprehending by means of the senses or of the mind, cognition, understanding. Now that's a little bit more difficult to kind of understand, so I'll go to the second definition that it has here, and I think that may be a little bit easier to understand. It has here, the definition for perception is immediate or intuitive recognition or apprehension, appreciation as of moral, psychological, or aesthetic qualities, insight, intuition, or discernment. So I think that perception is just your individual way of understanding is the way I kind of got the idea of what perception actually means. So however one person accepts or interprets information, to put it more succinctly, your own understanding. I'm done. I'm done.
Carlos, anything?
But as far as as you know, definition or?
Just, you know, general. I just want to say, too, just to take a moment, you can contact us at 866-510-9025. You can also contact us at codebreakers1999@gmail.com. And we're on Twitter, codebreakers191. So thank you for those definitions, Brother DC.
There's so much going on. I don't really know what, and I'm sorry about my microphone. I'm on my Bluetooth. I know it doesn't sound great. And I hate it, but my microphone is not, I don't know what happened to it, but it's not coming. It don't even come on anymore, so.
You clear enough. You good. You good to go.
Yeah, we got you.
Yeah, am I clear?
Yeah.
I know that mic sounds so good, though. But anyway,
yes, sir. And being so vain,
studio quality mic.
I'm gonna order me one tonight. So I mean, it definitely. I'm just hearing DC talk now, even Mr. Reed, and so I can hear this. It's just level of quality, obviously. But anyway, I mean, it's a lot going on. It's always obviously things going on in this country and obviously worldwide. So. I will mention, I think there was a, was there an article, you sent an article on something that happened at Bowie State. Bowie State University?
Yeah, you're talking about. Yeah, go ahead.
African American, quote unquote, officer who was murdered at the University of Maryland campus. Is that what you're referring to? Or?
I don't know, like some white kid.
I don't know if he's stabbed. The one you're talking about. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, some white dude. I think he was a kid in the school or whatever. Had stabbed.
He stabbed him. It was, well, from what I'm understanding is, I think he was told to move left, and some kind of exchange took place between the two, and you know,
wasn't the white kid like a part of the Klan or just a wife of just a some organization or something?
No, I'm not really aware of the full story, so I don't want to speak on it totally. If you know, because
I
don't want to guess on that.
He's a part of the alt. I'm looking at it right now. He's a part of the alt-right movement.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think Mr. Reed had a little bit. We was sort of discussing before the actual program on. Mr. Reed, do you want to kind of fill in the blanks about the race soldier, or the racist white supremacist that kind of you know, pulled an assassination on a fellow soldier of American military?
This terrorist, he was a student, I think, at Bowie State. I'm not sure. They went to two different colleges, the victim and the terrorist. And
right.
I think, well, him, the victim, and some of his friends were waiting on an Uber car. And so this drunk terrorist, they say alcohol is involved, but let's not use that as an excuse for terrorism. But this terrorist come down the street and just basically being a bully, said something like step to the left or on your left or something like that. And the victim, who had just really been sworn in as an officer in the United States Army, his father said had aspirations of becoming a general one day. Well, this terrorist stabbed him and killed him. And so he, like Paradox said, he belonged to this alt-right. It's not right. The name of their group, although we can associate them with that movement we've been hearing about through the U.S. media, but it was spelled R-E-I-C-H, as in Third Reich, Nazi stuff. neo-Nazi. So this, he belonged to a group. I don't know if it was a secret group. It wasn't secret from Facebook, where they put all this hateful stuff about Jews, about non-white people, period, and particularly focused on black victims in this country. All kind of derogatory stuff. That's what one of the investigators was saying as they start to try to charge this terrorist, not with a crime involving terrorism, but with a hate crime, which I don't know if I too much agree with the logic of hate crimes, because it was an act of terrorism, but that's the facts of the case as I know them and have read them.
Yeah, I have a quick story from the Washington Post, so I just found it, so just bear with me. It's really, really quick article. Go ahead.
It's
a real quick article, and I think we can get into it after that. On Saturday, reputed racist and supposed member of a white supremacist Facebook group allegedly stabbed to death a young black second lieutenant in the U.S. Army who was standing with friends on the campus of the University of Maryland.
Hold right there. I want to break down what you're going to say. Now, read that first sentence one more time for me. You said three interesting words.
On Saturday, a reputed racist and supposed member of the white supremacist Facebook group allegedly...
Right there. White supremacist Facebook. The last time I checked, black people getting shut down on Facebook, YouTube videos getting pulled, trying to not even really talking about nothing, just trying to maybe just help black people, or just, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's funny how Facebook, not funny, I hate to say it that way, because this is not a surprise, this is very normal, but it's interesting, I should say, how Facebook is letting that exist. And I know people who are having hard times right now, even trying to stream videos that's literally only talking about helping, not even talking about nobody else, like you know, messing up their feeds, their streams, you know, making it kind of like, you know how it'll run for a minute, then drop, and then run again for a minute. There's all type of random interruptions. But I'll stop right there. Go ahead.
Richard Collins III, a senior at Bowie State University, who was going to graduate on Tuesday, was at a bus stop with two friends near the University of Maryland, Montgomery Hall on Regents Drive, about 3 a.m. He and his friends realized the shuttle bus they were awaiting had stopped the service and called for an Uber. According to court documents, the group heard Sean Christopher Ubinski, 22, screaming. Ubinski approached them and reportedly threatened, step left if you know what's good, what's best for you. As Ubinski neared the group, Collins refused to move. One member of the group saw Ubinski brandishing a 3 to 4 inch silver blade before Ubinski plunged it into Collins' chest. The friend then ran to call 911. She also asked the Uber driver to call 911 while other friends attempted to help Collins, who died later at the hospital. Ubinski, sitting on a bench at a bus stop about 50 feet from the stabbing, was apprehended by two police officers. Witnesses identified him as the subject. Police said he had been drinking. They did not know whether he was also under the influence of drugs. Police authorities said surveillance cameras.
Right, not beat up, not shot, but arrested, right? He's living, right?
They said he was sitting down on a bench 50 feet away, very calmly. He was. Police authorities said surveillance cameras showed the attack. Ubinski, 22, has been charged with first and second degree murder and the first degree assault. On Sunday, University of Maryland Police Chief David Mitchell confirmed he is working with the FBI. Ubinski is reportedly as a member of the Facebook group called the Alt-Reich, as in the right with the Germany government during the World War II occupation, where racist remarks are posted. He stated, "Suffice it to say that it's despicable. It shows extreme bias against women, Latinos, members of the Jewish faith, and especially African Americans. I'm not aware of any incidents and threats here on campus, but certainly an increase. I'm sorry, I'm not aware of any increase in threats here on campus, but certainly an increase in fear. Mitchell said, if I'm a person of color, I would certainly look at this as something that could happen to me. In fact, I know on Facebook our students are saying that. He stated, it never gets any worse than this. I sat with the victim's father, who was a military veteran, and his pastor, and we shed tears together. I can tell you, it rips your heart out. So that's pretty much the actual story. So
the reason I brought it up now. Go ahead.
No, just say this. Now this guy, Urbanski.
Yeah, Urbanski. I know I'm probably pronouncing it wrong, but who cares? I mean, who cares what his name is? Yeah.
Right, we got the idea. But clearly, now there's a number of things that, and this is going back to language and how you can twist people's perceptiveness when it comes to reading the story. Now, for some reason, they wanted to throw in the fact that he'd been drinking. How many times have we seen people getting killed or murdered and there's no mention of any type of mental intoxication? I'm sorry, alcoholic intoxication or drug intoxication. So it leaves a little bit of a doubt as to the motive. But one thing is for sure, based on the story, is that he had a perception, and his perception was that this young man was a threat to him in some shape or form or fashion, regardless of his mental state at the time. But he perceived him as a threat. And something that kind of underscores and underlies that is the fact that he does have ties to a white supremacist terrorist group. There's another article that I want to share with the listeners as well, if we get a chance, which kind of contrasts this particular article, but in a different light, because it doesn't involve any murder or any type of killing. But before I moved on to that paradox, if you wanted to add on.
Yeah, the reason why I mentioned, well, a lot of reasons, obviously, but one of the main reasons why I brought that up is because it's in Bowie, Maryland. And I believe that it's between Bowie State University and Bowie, Maryland, which is Prince George's County,
mm-hmm.
and University of Maryland, which is also in Prince George's County. And Bowie and Maryland, Bowie and University of Maryland is probably, 20 minutes from each other?
Yeah, it's about 20 minutes if you go down 495. Yeah.
And I would argue, we can argue its affluency in that particular county as far as African Americans are concerned. And also the percentage of whites and non-whites in that particular county. And even those in University of Maryland is in College Park, Maryland. So I just want to point that out just to so people can kind of get an understanding. Both of those places are about 25 minutes, really less than that, maybe about 20 minutes. They're both proximity to D.C. It's probably about 20 minutes, right?
Yeah.
I think Bowie is probably east. It's about 20 minutes east of D.C., and College Park is even closer to D.C., maybe 15 minutes or 10 minutes, well, which is, and it's maybe north, I guess you would consider north of Washington, D.C. area.
Well, you know what?
As a matter of fact.
It depends on what part of D.C. you're going to, so.
More like 5 minutes on the other side going to New
Hampshire. Bowie is very close to what we call Southeast DC here, because you go 50 to 295 on the south side, you'll be there quickly. And then the University of Maryland, of course, is closer to the northwest side of DC if you was going into the city from the school. So yeah, that's the differences between the two.
Yeah. So, now, as far as what I try to get clarity on is that Maryland is the South. Now, Maryland has done it, not to harp on this particular conversation, but Maryland is a Southern state, an original Southern state. It's an original 13 colony. So the history is here. It's been here for a long time. even though it's tried to mask, you know, over the decades, it's tried to mask itself. And this is an interesting incident because I'm going to look for any outrage. I'm going to look how the energy is going to be managed. You know, people are going to be upset, but is it going to be going to church and praying? And here we go again, and, you know, kids come out and say, oh, this could happen to me. This could happen to me. I mean, it's insanity in the response. You know, I think that, you know, I don't even know how to honestly put the words. I'm just going to say it, I guess. Is that we have no protection, right? I'm just saying random stuff at this point. I don't really know how to, like, make it make sense. Like, you know, this event happened. But then it's like, well, this is a common event. But then we pretend that it's, you know, not we, but people pretend that it's not common, that it's abnormal. It's because Donald Trump is in office. It is? I mean, does it make sense to someone? Like, if you really sit around and think about something, the alt-right is just because Donald Trump's in office. But he spontaneously, right, from nothingness, this all just took place in 3 months. There is not a systematic, historical answer to this. It's the vulnerability of black people, people who are classified as black. You know, it shows the vulnerability. And what I mean by that is response. And so we're elevated for a second, right? So Syria bombs or blows something up, right? What was the response? What was the American response to that? Right?
How many times? Dropping
59, right?
Dropping megaton bombs on people.
Oh, they did MOB. Yeah. I think it was in Afghanistan. I want to get it all right. I know that's what we know about. And then they dropped 59 tomahawks, right? At an airbase. That's their response. So, you know, Britain has the attack at this concert, right? There's going to be a response to that, right? That means Arabs are going to be rounded up in England, right? Probably in France, probably in Germany, probably in America. Harassment, you know the process. You know how this works. Understand what is our response, right? So the nine in Charleston gets murdered. White guy. It's a one-off. Matter of fact, for black people. And I'm speaking for all of us, and I know that's incorrect. It appears the response doesn't seem to be equal. Like the response, I'm not saying it couldn't be, but where you just take it, and you know you think about it, and what I do know is that many of us take it, and a few of us don't, and a few of us have responded over the centuries. That's clear, obviously. But I think sometimes, you know, clearly there's no fear. We're talking about Bowie, Maryland. Bowie, Maryland's average income is $110,000.
Yeah, a lot of black people make their money.
Average income, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You have the South and you have the North. The South is black folks. The North is Old Town.
Old Town boy.
Probably some other people is Old Town boy.
Yeah. Right?
The last time I checked, I don't know about any so-called racial tension in that city. Who knows? I don't know. To isolate the event and then manage it is most fascinating. When you have a county, are they going to call for the death penalty? Are they going to call it the Terrorist Act? Are they going to label white people terrorists? I mean, I know the answer to these questions. Clearly, it would already have been done. The response to Arab so-called Islamic terrorists, that's what they call them, immediately labeled in Guantanamo Bay, I guess. You know, white men have an issue with themselves, and then they take it out on black males and black females, right? I grew up thinking that we were tough people when I really think about it, right? White folks are scared of her. They scared of her. They punks. Look at them. They weak. Look at her. Look at her. Look how big and strong we are. They can't run. They can't do nothing. Right? They steal everything. They ain't nothing. And then this event happened. Now, my question is, I didn't get the phone. I mean, are we mobilizing? Are we about to put in some work? That's what I'm trying to think about. What I'm trying to figure out is that I'm, you know how you're being told, you know what, I'm going to stop ranting. Go ahead, Chief. I'm not even going to go down that road.
Finish your thought. You need to finish your thought, though, cause so it can be more right. coherent when somebody's, you know. Go ahead and finish what you were saying.
Look, I'm just trying to get an understanding of, you know, many of us do a lot of talking, right? And few will do action, and then they will suffer the consequences because of how the environment is structured. Right, so you will be punished, but you have the ability to act. Right, so the sacrifice has to be, well, okay, well, we understand that you may have the numbers, but we also understand that y'all are vulnerable. Right, you have fear in you. Now that fear tends to come out on us either through prison or through death. Right, to try to. And it's not even keeping us in order. What's so crazy about it is that it's not that, you know, we're compliant people, right? We're not obedient, we're compliant, meaning that we follow the process, meaning that if you set something up for us, we will participate, right? We will compete with you, we will participate. So to make me understand that a white male, a 22-year-old white male, University of Maryland, Bowie State University, in Prince George's County, Maryland, in 2017, can murder a black boy, a black man, someone who's about to join the military, that's about to kill for these people. He gets stabbed, and the black responds, right? And this is not to indict black people. This is just to flesh it out as far as what are our thought processes? What are we looking to implement? You know, who do we organize? But then I'm not talking about organizing the march. I'm going to leave that right there. I'm talking about that. What I mean is that do we have an equal response to violence, right? Like I said before, there's human beings that are living right now that I can't process. I can't process their life. I can't see how they're breathing. But that is what it is. I'm going to leave that there. My thing is that when you have nine people, you have this kid going to a church kill nine people, right? You have, I've actually heard black people, this is very anecdotal. I asked this guy about this exact situation, which is, you know, white dude killed this guy, right? And their response was, well, and it's rhetoric. It's literally right wing mostly, because the liberals said differently. But it's almost like I hear black people spewing white, right-wing nonsense about, well, we kill each other. Or, you know, what's the difference between, you know, my cousin got a stray bullet. Like, it's like we merge violence together. That's how we excuse it, is my whole point. Now, I'm not saying that's what we all do. But it seems for the average Joe, the unconscious, the one who's just living their life day to day, when you ask the rant, you just ask the question, that's the answer that you get when it's a one-on-one incident. Now, the Charleston 9, you know, you ask the same question, it's a more difficult response, right? Well, we got to pray for them. I'm sorry for their family, you know. Or some of us want to respond to it, but I'm not sure if we've been developed or we... What I try to understand is that how do you produce anger? How do you produce enough anger to get a response versus the excuse part? Like, you know what, I'm just going to talk about it, or I'm just going to write about it. Like, are we in a position in 2017 that a percentage of African Americans, I can't speak for everybody, that we're not not really in a position to respond, but in so many ways, meaning that there's like a pre-printed out sheet that has like 5 bullet points on it, and these are the only things that we are. This is the only responses that we get. Anything outside of those responses, we're the terrorists, or we're the, you know, we're the we went too far, or you know, let the system deal with it. But then time and time again, you know, cops, other whites, etc., you know, don't do time. No death penalty. I don't even know if anybody white's been killed for killing somebody black. I really don't know. I don't know if the guy who killed the 9 at the church is in a death penalty. There's so much murder and stuff. I can't keep up with all this stuff. But, you know, I'm just thinking, I don't want to be get too far out there on this, but it's just a strange thing that, like, I almost feel like, okay, this event happens all the time, obviously. To counter it, you just run me to a particular environment and say, you kill each other, so that I'm gonna cop out on that. So then I said, okay, you know what it is? Okay, so I just have to find certain people to put work in, right? I have to look at it as, okay, I'm gonna say you're my people. These are my people, and you don't have to like it. You can even reject it, but I'm gonna still say you're my people. And I'm going to take the ownership. I'm going to step up and be the one to say, you know what? I will risk my life. I will put myself on the line. I will expose myself. I will expose myself because someone at some point has to say, you know what? If you hurt one of us, there's going to be a response. And don't worry about what we're doing in our environment. Now, I know that's complicated because of how we interact with the environment, right? We're in a position where we're getting help. So that it's almost like, you know, and I don't want to get into the government thing, but it seems like when someone gives you help, you're vulnerable to their rules, right? So I'm going to help you, so I'm going to make you be gay to make a point, right? I'm going to give you benefits, I'm going to help you out. Now you owe us something. So when we decide to want to make you feminine, or we decide to want to change some, you know, change rules, you need to go along with it because, you know, we're taking care of you. We got your back. And so it's complicated, obviously, but it's a strange thing. It's almost as if I prefer to, you know what, let me suffer. I hate to say this, by the way, because it's a paradox, it's a contradiction. I'm being, what is it called? When, you know, you're saying it, but you're kind of the opposite of that. Like, I'm a hypocrite when I'm speaking this. I'm a hypocrite at the end of the day, right? Because I'm in this state. So you know, this happens. You know, my point is this. If he's my man, I'm calling my people, right? If I'm in the mix, he's my man, I'm calling my people. We'll deal with it, right? But most of us don't have that kind of protection. That's a street thing. So clearly, it doesn't really matter what you look like. If you do something to my man, I have to deal with you, right? That's a street thing. That's not really what I'm talking about. But we should have that same thought pattern for all of us. Anyway, I'll stop right there. My bad, guys. I didn't mean to just go, you know, go on and on and on. But
what's interesting about it, get off subject. You're good. But what's interesting about this particular tragedy is that looking this guy up, Sean Christopher Yubanski. If you go out there and look on the court case search for the District Court of Maryland, right, you look this guy up, they have the criminal complaint in there already. And this is the first time I've seen it. Obviously, you know, I've had to look up stuff that I've had in there, traffic tickets, things like that. But they have this guy's race listed as white. It says white, comma, Caucasian, comma, Asiatic, Indian, comma, Arab. Now think about that for a second, right? This is actually the first time. I mean, I go out here every now and then just to look around, and this is the first time I've seen this type of combination. Anyway, I say that to say that, and I got a couple other points I want to talk about this before I share this other article. But it's interesting how, going back to language, they, you know, they always throw around, oh, we have Muslims who have been radicalized, within this country or elsewhere, based on Facebook group associations, based on groups that they may actually attend in person, what have you. But I've never heard, and I've touched on this before, I've never heard of a radicalized Christian, which potentially he may be one of. But this guy, apparently, based on what the preliminary reports about his Facebook association with the Alt-Reich, as in the Third Reich, he could have been quote-unquote radicalized, whatever that means, whatever that is going to lead to. I'll just say that to say and make the comparison, the foolish comparison and hypocrisy. The guy is from Severna Park, Maryland. Severna Park is about 15 minutes from Annapolis. And Severna Park is north of Bowie. So you're talking about, I lived in that area one time. And the Maryland is interesting because you have a hodgepodge of different people. But one thing you'll notice is that in certain areas, the so-called white people have a different mentality. I mean, as far as how they interact with you, I'm not saying they are better than another group or worse than another group, but they, you know, the different mentality out there. I'll leave it at that as far as that guy is concerned. I'm not going to give him, you know, more time than we've already given him. But I did want to touch on one thing that I found to be an issue as far as anything that we report on news-wise that has to do with so-called black people, especially tragedies like this, is that there's a gap, I think, in my view, in terms of continued reporting. So in other words, you have quote-unquote black Twitter or quote-unquote, and it goes to what Paradox was saying as well, quote-unquote, I don't know, black YouTube. They will post stories about things that have happened real-time or things. And it may last for maybe a week or maybe 2 weeks. Now, if there are protests that go with that, then it may actually be drawn out further. Then that's largely due to the quote-unquote mainstream that's come in and given it life and given it more media attention. But the problem is, I think, is a gap in continued reporting. So, for instance, if anybody remembers the fire in Atlanta, I believe that was back in March, that collapsed part of I-85, one of the main thoroughfares that goes through Atlanta. And they attributed the fire to a homeless man classified as black, named Basil Eleby, E-L-E-B-Y, claiming that he was smoking crack and somehow, I'm paraphrasing, and obviously, but somehow he ignited fire to the stuff that was stored underneath this bridge, which the DOT had stored under the bridge, which they claim was not flammable, but I believe some of that material was PVC piping. Now, anybody who knows anything about rockets, there are two main fuel sources that you can use to shoot a rocket into the air, one of them being PVC pipe. All you need is an accelerant to ignite to get the PVC to be combustible. So I said it to say that the stuff under the bridge was flammable, but you need, or let's just say, someone needs a scapegoat in order to place the blame. So what other, there's no one more perfect than someone who's poor, because being poor in America is criminal. It's akin to being criminal just by being poor. And if you're black on top of that, classified as black, then we really got you. We can pretty much put anything on you, and you have a hard road ahead of you. But following this guy's story, I think one of the recent updates in April was that he has four attorneys coming out to do his legal defense, which is pro bono, and he has, you know, some other groups, support groups and social justice groups that are coming out to support him, you know, saying that, you know, look, you guys are scapegoating this man for something that you are responsible for. You know, you caused all this damage, you caused all type of congestion, by storing his materials for years under this bridge. And so they look for a scapegoat. So that's what I mean by the continued reporting on stories. You know, let's not, I'm not trying to give anybody orders, but I think it behooves us to, if we're going to report on news, and I'm not taking that mantle, but I think anybody who does, because we do have people out there that engage in that practice, continue reporting, I think, is very necessary to keep people updated. You know, a lot of people are caught up into the normal 9-to-5, in my experience, and the normal news stories that are run across the quote-unquote mainstream media, and a lot of times we've even been programmed to not even have a memory that lasts more than maybe a couple weeks, some people a few days, and then it's on to the next thing. So we got to keep this in the forefront of our minds, and I think that could go a long way in doing what Paradox said with respect to trying to counter things that we're experiencing.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, I always go back to Dr. Wells, and you know, I use her as my barometer when things get confusing, and kind of, you know, go back to her teachings and just remember some of the things that she used to say. And you know, this just comes down to me, what she used to say is that there is a need for white people to have this type of response when it comes down to black people, because it's just based on pure genetics. It's brought out through actions. And, you know, if you are familiar with Dr. Wilson's thesis, she made it very, very clear. She thought that racism was a way of white people basically stopping their genetic annihilation. If they did level the playing field, which means that if they did make things more even, they didn't even have to make it even. If they just stopped making it so lopsided and allow equality on a lower level, if that does exist, then, you know, to her theory, white people wouldn't exist anymore. And then I just go back to thinking about somebody that's like a Richard Spencer, where he is clearly somebody that is spewing these ideas of genetic survival, where he clearly says that he wants America to remain white. He wants the ideals to remain white. He wants to make sure that there are white people around when he is long gone and dead, and that this particular country doesn't turn into a country where the people that were the so-called conquerors, or whatever you want to call it, the people that basically took over this landmass, they still want this to be represented forever and ever and ever and ever. White supremacy needs to reign supreme. The thing is that white people are a global minority. They're probably, based on their own analysis and how they view themselves as far as the white group, their so-called recessive genetic code, that there's less than 10% of the population. And if you're less than 10% of the population, that means that if you have sex or, you know, get with any other people in any kind of large number, then that would annihilate your gene set, which means that your group would be marginalized even more so. So I think that this whole thing is all due to genetic setup survival, which would kind of explain a lot of the actual actions that white people, you know, do on a regular basis. And I think that if we can come to the understanding that this is something a little bit more deeper than just, you know, status quo. Oh, this is just the one-off, or this is just different things that's being done. You know, Dr. Welsing was very, very clear that, you know, normally when a police officer stops a black male, and if he's highly melanated and of a larger degree black male, they look at this in the subconscious as somebody that can annihilate their genes. So, you know, as you hear on a regular basis, people would normally say, I thought he had a weapon, or I thought he was reaching for a weapon. And it's in our psychology, in the way that they have actually programmed everyone, and this is including victims of racism that is forced into the classification of black, they have put people in a paradigm of thinking that black males are dangerous, rapists, people that are going to be people that's unworthy of life to a certain degree. So if you catch us in a situation where we are under law enforcement, then, you know, we can be shot down in the street and there won't be any kind of thought pattern about it, because we already know standard operating procedure. If they go through the bylaws of this particular person's past, which shouldn't have anything to do with whatever that altercation was at that present moment, but if they look in that person's past and there's anything, a fight in third grade, he smoked a joint in high school, or he had a fight with his wife, then, you know, the shooting is justified. And that's what we're dealing with. So speaking about perceptions and how things have basically gathered over time, and how a pathology has now been set, has basically developed as far as like racism, white supremacy, which would need a direct counter for us to deal with this ideology. So that's what we're up against.
Let me just say, just to add to, you know what I was thinking, I was wondering is, you notice that they're not, and you notice they're not moving from this country. Right, there's whiter countries in this country, right? I think the United States is around, what, 68% or whatever, you know, these are numbers, but, you know, 60-something, maybe 70% in the U.S. But you notice how there's no, you know what's funny? Is that there's no mass exodus of white people from North and South America, North Central and South America. There's no mass exodus to the North of America. You know, the colder climate, anything was say above South Dakota, right? You get a line across everything. We just say anything across South Dakota and up, right? Which would be your whiter areas, or anything below Brazil. Right, you would say would be your whitest areas, you know, like, you know, maybe Argentina, something like that, wherever that, yeah, Argentina is that below from you? I think it is, but anyway, I just wonder why you don't hear that conversation. You know, if there's too many people with color in their skin, then just, why don't you just go to Europe, you know, go to Russia, you know. It's a weird thing when you actually have countries that are like 95% or close to 95%, you know, what they would classify as white, but they're here. So the reason why I brought that up is that we should be a little bit more. And you know what's so funny? We're not. The sad part is that a few of us have already called it, Dr. Welsing, clearly for 50 years. And a few others have already called that at some point, I think, we're going to have to deal with some version, I guess, of apartheid. Is that where they're, what, 9% white and they control the whole nation, but it's 90% black? Keep it simple. Is that correct? Something around there? I don't know if they're 10%. I think like 8.7 or 9% based off some of the numbers. Come out of South Africa. It could be even smaller than that, but they are, I think, if I'm not mistaken, they're mostly in control of that population, that landmass. And so I think sometimes to myself, America has to deal with a more aggressive version of cleansing. What I mean by that is, for every 100,000 black men, I think was it 10,000 that's in prison, which is insanity. I'm still trying to deal with that, but the number of us that are in prison, that have been in prison, to me isn't solving the problem, right? I'm talking about from a white perspective. This is just me hypothetical, having a hypothetical conversation. So you're putting us in prison, not solving the problem. But it may make you feel like it is, but it's not solving the problem. Because you're not only dealing with us producing children, but you're also dealing with non-whites coming from the South as well, right? So from the fear perspective, what do we have to deal with when you contrast that with Germany and the Jews, is my point. And I think Dr. Welsing has been touching on this. I'm not saying we're running from it, but it's complicated, because we're talking about something that's hard to process, hard to understand, is that at some point there's going to be, okay, I'll put it this way. If white really exists, meaning that it can physically affect you in this reality, no fantasy stuff, in this reality, when we say white, we know what that means. We know what people were speaking of. We know where they come from. Just to keep it very simple, not to get into no metaphysics and nothing like that. Just we know we just to keep it very simple. If at some point they say, well, we're locking up black folks, we're starving them out, we put them in these things called ghettos, we're exploiting them, we're using them, we're manipulating them, right? And we're still losing. You know, we're not producing enough children. We can't compete. The economy, the way things are structured, it's a challenge for us. So we're still dealing with birth rate issues. We're dealing with all these internal things that they're pretty much trying to keep. They're not really keeping it private, but people have to kind of, if you look into their culture, you spend more time looking at what whites are doing and trying to understand what they're doing, I think you have a better understanding of what you are. I know that's kind of weird to say, but I was messing with T earlier today about being Ibu, and that if I'm Ibu and I was captured, but I was still Ibu, and I'm in this country and I'm still Ibu, and I still speak my language, and I have to deal with these people, it's going to be a different relationship. And this country really wouldn't exist, I think, in the way it exists now. I think you potentially would have had a much different revolution. But anyway, that's hypothetical as well. But by us having to become this thing called black, Negro, colored, etc., and we're dealing with people who have looked in the mirror, Dr. Wells, have looked in the mirror, I am white. I've been all over the world, and everyone else has color. And their color will destroy what we believe is something, is a real, tangible thing. Mm-hmm. And for African Americans interacting with white people in this country, we can sometimes get confused by talking to specifically liberal white. We can sometimes get a little confused, and I've been there, where they're not going to talk about that with you. They're not going to get into those conversations are held, in my opinion, by the highest people. Also some of the lowest people as well. So you tend not to interact with those two groups, right? So the poorest, craziest ones you don't deal with, because they're probably affiliated with a more physical, direct, violent group that'll deal with you on a day-to-day individual level at the gas station type situation. And then at the highest level, we're talking about poisoning water, we're talking about manipulating the economy, we're talking about cutting, like they're doing these massive budget cuts right now, things of that nature, to make you suffer on a mass scale, right? And then, not to get too far to that, but I'm just making a point that at some point, there will be a breaking point. At some point, if we really think, and I wish Dr. Welsing was still here to really pick her brain on, there's going to be a breaking point. No matter how hard black people try to be so-called colonized, civilized, whatever you want to call it, no matter how hard we try, the problem is our genetics. See, I think what we have to get to the point is that we can't do nothing about it. This is what God has created. There's nothing we can do about it, right? I can't erase myself. So the question is, will there be another point on the planet where you're going to see an aggressive response? And I mean, the reason why I'm saying it that way is that I feel like the prison situation is aggressive. But is it? Is it more to come, is my point. Is it the threats? You know what? We've tried all these events, and we're still losing. What do we do next? Are we going to have to do something aggressive, direct, extreme? Because our people can't handle this. Our people are under duress. And I never thought about it. You know, not never thought about it, but until interacting with Dr. Welsing, you just missed that whole philosophy. But anyway, I'll stop. I'm sorry, guys. I don't mean to rant on. I'll stop right there.
T, you got anything?
Hope that made some sense.
It's interesting. You know, we talked about the. Was it Igbo and the, I guess, the Hausa, what have you, different tribes, or what in present day, what we call Nigeria, for the most part, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting, and I'm not just talking about any group in particular, but I'm just talking about people from the continent in general who are classified as black, how, you know, and I'm talking about concepts, how they're created in the mind, how essentially what we're looking at in terms of Africans coming here, because you never see what you see from Africa as far as immigration is concerned coming here, is that they're not your rudimentary African. They're mostly colonized Africans. You know, they speak English, they speak French, but they're not someone who is, I guess you would call, more of a tribal, someone who has not been exposed and colonized in terms of their thought process and their action. They've been educated in Western philosophy and thought, and that's what you see coming here, and a lot of them are becoming, I think, more embracing of what has been created as a concept, which is blackness. And I think in coming up on break here, so we can get back onto that on the other end of the break. This is the Code Breakers. Thank you for listening. We'll be back with you after this short commercial.
Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Welcome back to the Code Breakers. You can reach us at 866-510-9025. Feel free to join in the discussion. The lines are open. We are more than happy to take calls, questions, disputes, anything you have for us to add to what we are discussing. Also, we are at codebreakers1999@gmail.com and codebreakers191 on Twitter. Anyway, on the side of the break, I just wanted to get this in here. As we were talking about migration, this is not just peoples from Africa, but I guess worldwide, is that coming to this so-called country, notice a trend that they become more accepting of blackness. And in that acceptance, they have been, this is not a knock on victims because of white racism, white supremacy, but it's just an observation. In accepting blackness, they have actually tried to carve out a niche in respect to trying to get closer to whiteness. So they accept that label, and it seems to me like they, second, maybe third generation, has started to tend to more shed more of the Africanness, the essence, or the customs and cultures that they come from, and being more accepting of Western culture, quote unquote American culture. And so within that, you have people who are in that acceptance realm who are butting heads against, and it is a new paradigm for them in a sense, but for people who have been here, you know, I don't know how many generations we are now, people who are so-called native here, who have been brought here, their ancestors through slavery, have a different perspective, some of us do, in regards to how the system works. We're not necessarily trying to... Hello?
Hello?
Yes, noise in the background. We're not necessarily trying to, some of us, get closer to whiteness. We just want to do away with the system altogether. But then you have those who want to try to get closer to whiteness, try to preserve it. You know, it is difficult imagining a paradigm outside of what we have now, riding around in cars, if you want public transportation, if you are working a 9-to-5, you have money in the bank, food in your refrigerator, roof over your head. Something outside of that paradigm is difficult to imagine. I mean, because if you say, well, let's do away with this system, the question will come back to say, well, what replaces it? You can't think of anything better. And so it's a defensive response. And most of the time, I mean, when that response is given to you, say to that. I mean, when your whole idea of freedom and justice is wrapped up in the system, how do you respond to that? Because your thoughts are really not your own thoughts. You know, you've been told that you're free, so you generally believe that. And just the fact that when you interact with other people, just think about how you have to actually suspend your consciousness. I was talking about this with Paradox. Yeah, he was asking, effects like us is what he dubbed it. Effects like us who challenge the system, I guess you could call it, at least not physically maybe, but at least intellectually, and try to examine it. Is that we're defects? And when you're a defect and you go around other people who are not necessarily privy or may not be believing of something outside of their system, how you have to suspend your consciousness, whether that's among family or friends, your spouse, your partner, whoever the case may be, how actually painful that can be for you. Sit there and observe some of the nonsensical conversations that go on. And a lot of them actually fall into pre-programmed archetypes. You know, you have your church goer, you have your black power fist person, you have your quote-unquote institutionalized people. But when you actually act outside of that, people will shut down. And so you actually have to spend your consciousness in order to try not to offend people. Turn yourself into someone that no one wants to be around. And so I was saying to Paradox, that is actually the punishment for going against the grain. I don't want to take up too much time, but I thought it was important to drive home the fact that you're dealing with beliefs. And when beliefs are created for you, they dictate how you perceive things. I can give some examples of that. One primarily would be based around religion. When you're given this doctrine from an early age, everything that you see out here in this world, everything you perceive, whether you know it or not, is actually based upon that religious belief. You know, how you interact with other people, how you, you know, if you engage with them physically, how you treat other people. So I did want to include that because I thought it was important too, because a lot of times I think we believe belief and perception are two separate things, but one drives the other, and so I think it's important to understand that.
Alright, well let me just, if DC, if you got a second, let me just say a couple of things just on plug a few things if you don't mind. You still there?
Go ahead, sir.
Okay, so you know, I believe Thomas J. Curry, Dr. Curry, professor, Texas A&M, of he just, I think his book just dropped. I think maybe is it a few days ago? I thought it wasn't coming out until about July, or was it June 1st or July 1st? But the man, not the man, MAN-NOT, the man, not race, class, gender, and the dilemmas of black manhood. That is his new book, right? This is his book, right? Have you heard about that? DC, T, have y'all heard about it?
You're talking about Dr. Curry's new book, right?
Yeah.
It's called The Man Not. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He talked about it on the program. Yeah, I know.
I thought he said July 1st.
Well, I don't know the date that he said it was coming out, but I am looking forward to it. I know that he has the intro that's on Temple's website, so I know you're there
and kind of read the intro to it. Target,
yeah.
Other places.
Absolutely. So yeah, the book is coming out pretty soon. I don't know the date that it drops though.
It's out.
Oh, so it's already out.
It's out now. Okay.
I'm planning on
we need to order it. Maybe we could do
try to order it, I guess. From somewhere. Try to find someone black that's selling it. I don't know where
you definitely need to read the book, and then once the book, kind of do a program on it, and then if he will be so kind to kind of join us once again and kind of deconstruct what he's written, I'd be more than appreciate it. Yeah, absolutely.
I think we could read it, do an outline on it, and then talk to him. Hold up, maybe it's not out yet. I think it said July 1st, 2017, no preview.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought it was later in the summer, but you know,
they release it like this where you kind of see it, but it's not necessarily. I don't know if it's launched yet.
But for everybody out there, please check out Dr. Curry's work. He is one of the ones that is continuing the great work of, you know, breaking down the system and you know, focusing on the deconstructive ways that the system has basically attacked black young boys in particular, and other, you know, damaging ways that white supremacy has been doing damage to black people in general.
You know what it is? You can pre-order it. That's what it is. That's why it's up. You can pre-order it now for July 1st.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I'm reading it now. It releases on July 1st. One reason I was bringing it up, I was thinking, because, and I'm going to say something ignorant because I don't really keep up with everything, but I was wondering, I know we have Black Bookstore. I know we got one in Baltimore that we go to, but do we have, is it an online portal set up to where, you know what I was thinking? I meant to ask them that too today. Why can't I order the book directly from you? Number one, like, why can't you just set up a quick website, something simple, direct? But anyway, I know, you know, that's work, obviously. But
right.
I know infrastructure means something. We're not gonna play that. I don't play that. You know, I'm not playing that game. Infrastructure means something. But I was just wondering, you know. But anyway, neither here nor there. Somebody making tweet us, answer us, or post something, or tell us something about that. Because I was just wondering, you know, when you release a book like this, you know, I wonder if there are other ways to get it where he can still get, you know, the cash. But, you know what I'm saying? But Target doesn't get their cut, or whoever doesn't necessarily get their, you know, they don't eat on it. You can go directly. So he can get more to profit, obviously.
But yeah, anyway, if you look on the Texas A&M academia site for Dr. Tommy Curry, he has a bunch of drafts, papers mm-hmm. that he's worked on. Quite a few out here, actually, which you can download and check out. I don't know. I don't know if his book, The Man Not, is a compilation of those, but I did notice that he had a bunch of them out there.
No, that's totally separate. I mean, it's going to be, you know, close to the work that he has done, but it's totally separate. And I got a confirmation. It's out July 1st, 2017, officially the date that it hits. So I'm looking at it on Amazon, and he doesn't have his. He has Tommy J. Curry, provocative book, The Man Not, as a justification for black male studies. He posits that we conceptualize the black male as a victim oppressed by his sex. So that's
problem.
Yeah, he's going to do that.
they're probably gonna try to bury it, though. They're gonna probably try to bury it. But what's funny about it,
I hope he gets put on CNN and all the MSNBC, you know, talk shows.
It's a counter argument. So the problem is, it's a counter argument. Like, the agenda is women right now.
So let me
white women.
Let me
delve.
Women,
but he's gonna really be counter to that.
Let me.
Do you want to go there?
Yeah, I think we should.
I want to do one more thing before you jump into that.
Go ahead.
I also want to say, for listeners, they can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com. You know, go to the website. You know what they say? Peruse the site. Is that how you say it? You know, it's a lot of good material out there. I'll say that again.
Great content. Great shows, great programs.
Yeah. Great content. I'm a huge fan. I hate to say fan, but I'm definitely, I definitely appreciate the context of white supremacy big time. And I think they also, this is really doing a great job of setting up, you know, they have blogs and things. You can obviously join, set up your own channel as well. They also have Black Talk Media Project that I think you can donate to, and it's supporting, basically just supporting independent black media, et cetera, et cetera. You know, the social community online. The only reason I was bringing it up, I was just thinking about, I was listening to some program, and I was just thinking, that's kind of how some things are. You know, so when you have a community, you have a group of people who, even though, you know, we have to use this internet, et cetera, not to get into that conversation, but still someone or groups of people putting themselves out there to spend time doing some things that they really don't necessarily have to do. So it's pretty interesting that, you know, there's something out there, a platform out there for people to, you know, to consume media, to consume, you know, just consume news, be it, you know, current news, et cetera. A lot of variety. Just wanted to say that while I was thinking about it. Well, go ahead, DC.
Yeah, what I would like to say is that I think that one of the biggest reasons for the stagnation and the reason why there seems to be no movement in what I would call the black paradigm frustration that we find ourselves in, because everybody's always frustrated with somebody else's viewpoint and somebody else's solution to the problem of racism and white supremacy. The reason why we find ourselves in so much disagreement, I would say that it comes down to black people being ideological adversaries. That's my word for it now. That's my new term that I'm making up, that I'm gonna start to use. So I'm pretty much start to kind of declare it, because I think there's some things that we need to really, really, really need to start to separate ourselves on. And I say this with love to all victims of racism. VGQ, you get victims guaranteeing qualifications until this actual problem is solved. So, you know, have at it and get to doing. But one of the biggest issues I see, and a lot of times, it's not to any fault of any victim of racism. It just seems like it's just something that we normally do. We do a lot of blaming black folk. And I tend to stay away from that, and here's why. Because anything that you're going to blame a black person for, no matter how bad and detestable their behavior is, T has already alluded to it, it is based off a paradigm that you have been basically mentally into in the system of racism, white supremacy. And see, here's another thing that comes to the forefront. The comparison of yourself to other groups of people, whether this is a striver, I like using that word that Yvette Carnell, you know, kind of basically characterized people that will say, well, individually you could do this. It's all on you. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Yeah, shout out to Breaking Brown, Antonio Moore. Definitely Army, they're doing great work over there. Doing their due diligence, you know, their yeoman's work as far as breaking down the system of racism, white supremacy, and giving it a platform on black, we think is very important. And also, shout out to Dr. Boyce Watkins. I know that he has his platform where he's trying to push economics. Even though I fundamentally have some disagreements with that, I never will have, you know, a fundamental disagreement on somebody that's basically trying to do for black people. But just speaking on that, I think that what ends up happening, especially with our group, the people that's classified as black, our ideologies or however we have basically identified how this problem has basically formed and shaped and what our solutions are, we don't know how to fundamentally disagree and move forward. So what do I mean by that? Normally, when you get people that disagree so vehemently about what needs to be done, a lot of us, and I mean a lot of us, and this is me included, I'm including myself in this, if we have a disagreement with someone, especially someone that's classified as black, normally we do not know how to move forward with this particular person. I think that what ends up happening is we become more fragmented. So we don't know how to move together as a collective. We separate. And then we build our own identities, and white supremacy has allowed us to do this. And of course, white supremacy, in the overwhelming shape of things, is basically cloaked in capitalism, democracy, America, Western society. There's so many different words used to practice this that it's all cloaked. So even when they have agreements, Bill Maher showed it the other day. So you have a victim of racism, Cornel West, basically describing the reason why he did not vote, and the reason why Bill Maher had such an issue with it was that, you know, look, you know, we have a better way of mistreating you. Hillary is a better form of mistreatment than Donald J. Trump. So why choose somebody that we have a fundamental we used to these racist white supremacists, basically what he was saying to Dr. Cornel West. And what when he handled it in his own little way, and that's what I'm saying about us being in this paradigm that, you know, he's a professor, he's at an Ivy League, he's been back and forth with white people, and he calls them brothers and sisters, and anyway, there's a whole nother deal. But Bill Maher is not confused about racism and white supremacy, and that's our point. That's where we meet in the fork of a road as far as ideology. Now, I can get with a lot of different things when it comes down to people having their own viewpoint. I can respect that. But if you don't have a fundamental understanding that white people are not confused about racism and that they are dedicated consciously or subconsciously to maintaining the system of racism, white supremacy, then that's where I veer off from you. Because at that particular point, I know that you do not have a full understanding about what's going on. So whatever I'm talking about when we converse is going to combat each time. And I think that's what happens with black people. It's because we have different understandings of what the system is. Now, you'll ask somebody, does racism exist? Most black people is going to tell you yes. But then, hell, even Charles Barkley is going to tell you yes. But clearly, there's different types of motivation, understanding, things that should be done. All white people are not bad. So you start hearing stuff like that. Oh, it's not, you know, it's sometimes it's us, it's what we do. We can handle this, we can do this. And then you forget about, you know, what has been practiced for 400 years, the laws that have been put in place, the reasons why you see murders on TV and no police officers get charged for them. The reason why you can see language used that is pretty much on a regular basis that is patterned towards black people, and then you become what I call socially dyslexic. You become a hypocrite, like you spoke about it earlier, Paradox. You become a walking hypocrite because you're talking about racism, but you got white friends. You're talking about racism, but you love white people. You know, you're talking about racism, but you got a white mate. You got white best friends. I mean. The list goes on. I mean, our actions are enveloped into this paradox, and this goes back to having a dual identity in something that they have separated. So basically, blackness to me is the inability to be white. Now, I know a lot of people are not going to grasp that concept because people think of blackness as some kind of genetic real thing. Blackness to me is the ability to keep someone that is marginalized based off sight, based off color, and based off what they can identify as not white, not them, physically. So they know how to treat you based off history that's preset you. And I hope that kind of made sense because we're talking about illusion. We're talking about perception. Racism is very, very real.
I have a question for you.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead, Mr. Reed. I'm sorry.
A word that was mentioned during the program, and I kind of agree with what Paradox said. For the most part, although there have been very far and few instances of counter violence, for the most part, the resistance has been on an intellectual level. So if we're intellectually talking about the system and hopefully how to dismantle it, or if you in the area of surviving it. And, you know, Dr. Curry was mentioned earlier, and he has this book coming out. Well, when white people put stuff out, books out, or papers in academia on the university level, and we could say some of those papers is how to practice white supremacy, make it more efficient and work better. And they put these papers out there, and there's what's called a peer review. And people professionally critique it. It's not personal attacks on the author of the paper, but it is a critique of the work and the words and what's being stated and the theories that's being proposed. And so you have people who will, also look further into it. But isn't that how you advance on ideals or ideologies is by peer review? I mean, if it's a collective thing, so would a serious researcher who has done the research, put in the work, and assure them of their facts and can show the evidence of how this improved the lives of victims or how it countered you know, white supremacy. You know, if they put in that kind of work and they have, you know, so I guess I'm just saying, you know, isn't that how white people stay on top? I mean, do they fall out with each other or make it personal when another white person critiques their work saying, hey, my rocket designed to kill more non-white people out there in Syria. You know, Trump dropped that biggest, you know, and another one says, oh, no, this is a more effective way of killing them. You know, so they always have their disagreements on stuff like that. But, of course, it's all to refine what their pattern and practices. So isn't it logical for victims to do the same thing, to do peer review?
We don't have the just, you know, and I understand exactly what you're saying. I just think that it wouldn't work as successfully as it will for them. And there's one particular reason that I believe that, and being a student of Dr. Wells, and I think that their whole basis of their actions, whether it's subconsciously or whether it's consciously, is genetic survival.
Yvette Carmel, now, just y'all mentioned her. Please check out her broadcast.
Oh, no, we listen to her. Yeah, we listen to Yvette. We're on it.
Did you just see her comments? And I'm going to write her a personal letter because it was brave for her to say, I'm going to tell y'all the truth about Dr. Boyce Watkins and what he's trying to get black people to buy. Yeah. She said she held it in and held it in. But as a financial, you know what I'm saying? What does she call it? The gospel. It's just another gospel of prosperity, and where you can analyze it and break it down. But are we to just stand by and say and allow tens of thousands of black people to spend their money on something they think is going to counter racism, and it's not? It's not going to counter them in economics. So I'm sure some black people that's calling her a hater, or that she shouldn't say that about Boyce Watkins. But I don't have the audience she has, and I've said it on Tando Radio Show that the stock market is gambling, and he's selling $40 flash cards. That's just basically for a child to learn the different terms used in the stock market. Now, I spent money and made money on stock, not a whole lot, less than $2,000 in a year. That's chump change to what Warren Buffett and these other people is making. And I had a job and had access to a 401k, and she mentioned that. Most black people don't have access to a 401k to even play on the stock market. But when I did, I spent money on a course. It was a $200 course, and I don't want to give a commercial on the course, but it was more complicated than some flashcards. And then, you know, just selling it as you buy these flashcards and then play the stock market, that's like going to Vegas. You know what I'm saying? You could lose your money. Plus, as I pointed out, you're investing in companies that's practicing slavery and white supremacy.
That's what I was just about to say, Mr. Reed. That's exactly what I was about to say. You're talking about ending a system that you are investing into. That's my whole problem with it, like the logic of that. Go ahead.
Right, but that goes back to what I was talking about, the concept of peer review. If we see black people who have access to an audience, I mean, shouldn't we hold ourselves accountable as a collective for giving out accurate information?
Yes. Like I said, I agree with that. The reason why I say that it would be a problem on the overall, because we do have people that do critique, but the reason why somebody or a victim of racism would not take it with love and would take it with such vitriol, because they're going to look at you as trying to do what? Take money out of their pocket. So which, if they use this as a model to survive, which I think Dr. Boyce is doing, and he's a victim of racism in my eyes, you know, he's just like any of us trying to survive in the system, but he uses this for his survival. So if that is what he's doing, he's going to look at our ideals as being contrary to his particular survival and his family. See, and that's where it comes. But see, the overall thing is, and I suggested this to him in the comments of one of his videos, and I think he pretty much responded with, you know, you just want black people to be poor. Clearly, I don't want that. But I told him that, you know, it probably would help if you just say, I am not about, you know, I don't believe in, you know, he's starting to say it, you know, I don't believe really in white supremacy. I think that that's an illusion. I think that it's not true. So, you know, I just told him, just go a step further. Then, you know, don't put yourself in a situation where you're including all black people as a model to use what you're doing as something or as a model to free them from the system of racism, white supremacy. Just say, hey, this is something that you can possibly use. There's no guarantees. It just be as honest and as ethical as possible, which is impossible to do, but try your best because you're dealing with victims of racism. You're already dealing with vulnerable people, people with not that much money anyway. So I didn't talk to them. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, don't stop. The key is the honesty part. The key is the honesty part.
Yeah, and that's why I say it's ideological adversaries. We have a different pain point when it comes down to the system of racism, I guess is a more accurate way of saying it. You know, our pain points are different. Yours may be economical. Mine may be mistreatment. Mine may be you know, for some of our black women, our gender mirror, it may be of a sexual nature. Sexual exploitation. It may be not seeing themselves as beautiful in a Shea Moisture commercial. You see what I'm saying? Like we have all kinds of different pain points for people, but it's all the same system. And see, you know, if we can explain it to the audience in a way of what we're trying to do here in the Code Breakers is basically say this is a psychological system at heart, at the base. It's psychological. The perceptions that we have are based off somebody else's reality, but it's powered by our participation. Our participation clearly gives the system power. So if you play into the system, you believe in money, you believe in these things, you believe in these concepts, it's hard to beat this system. When you need the system to thrive. You don't want it to come down. Because if it comes down, if it crumbles, then our life as it exists ends. You know, no NBA, no NFL. Can we deal without that? Like that's what we're talking about. You see what I'm saying? Now, T, go ahead. I know you wanted to kind of jump in on this.
Yeah, I mean, it's just to give the analogy of Monopoly. When you are in the game. Okay. We can do that.
Radio since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
Welcome back to the Code Breakers. On the other side of the break, I was given the analogy of someone playing Monopoly and how everyone who's participating in the game of Monopoly has to buy into the concept and the rules of how the game is played in order for it actually to be a functional game for everyone to enjoy. And part of the goal is to amass as much wealth as you can and to buy a property and to force your opponent into bankruptcy, force them out of the game. So I said it to say that when you have individuals who, and that's most of us, who rely on this system to even just live within it, is that you you can easily get drawn into the game and start to buy into the rules of the game, the concept, the way the game is played, the way people give you advice on how to play the game, you know, looking up ways to better defeat your opponent. And so that becomes your actual, your MO. And so it takes over, it, in fact, it takes over the better half of yourself, if you want to consider that, where you might actually do as you all mentioned and keep the honesty piece where you actually, you know, letting people know what they're really getting into, because you get drawn into it, the seduction piece. And so I think that's part of the issue that we're facing as a people, adding in, and then when you add in the fact that we are, as victims of racism and white supremacy, we are mentally ill. I mean, if the so-called white man says that, you know, he only uses 10% of his brain, then where does that leave so-called black people as far as using their brain? Who knows? But it's not at the full 10%. That's just 10% of the mental capacity. So when you add in that mental illness to the fact that we're playing a game that we're trying to win, it's devastating, and it leads to the results of what you all were just talking about.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that that I would like to also reiterate, and this is just for anyone that may actually listen to the program and just be like, well, what are these guys are talking about? Neither one of us are sitting here saying that we have all the answers and we can solve all the ills of the black community. You know, that is not what we're saying. What I would suggest to a lot of black people, especially when it comes down to talking about this particular topic at its core, is that you know, first that we do a lot of listening, we show empathy, and that we know that when you're talking to another victim of racism, just speaking to what T's point is, we are mentally ill, but it's not our fault that we are mentally ill. It's due to the pathology, the breakdowns that has happened to our group of people. And when I say a group of people, I mean the forced group of people. That's for people that didn't identify being as black until they got to the States, or basically becoming black actually through birth by having a white parent or a parent that isn't actually so-called black. So there are all kinds of different definitions for the whole, you know, paradigm of what blackness is and what it encompasses. So that's what you're dealing with. Everybody is not going to agree, but to be able to deal with, you know, the differences that may occur when you're dealing with victims of racism.
Did I need to chime in after that? DC?
It's on you. Go ahead, bro.
you know, I was thinking about, I was just curious about you guys' opinion. I know that what was the topic of the program that we started with? The illusion? Thought I had it up.
Perception.
Perception.
Yeah, the illusion of perception. You know, I was thinking about, and I don't know if this, right, well, I don't know if it ties into, and I just was curious about you guys. You know, I was really, I'm going to try to stay calm. But, I was looking at I know I had sent y'all some links and stuff. You know, they were talking about let's get into the federal government stuff and some politics that's happening in real time like I was telling DC, it's a physical event. These things are really happening. You know, for all the conspirators out there, these events are happening. These people are making decisions that are going to impact the way you respond to the environment. And I was looking at some of the budget cuts and Republicans, Democrats, you know, white folks picking sides and non-whites having to decide shouldn't necessarily, I would say don't necessarily have to, but we've been pulled into most of the Democratic Party group, and then obviously what does that mean? What is the definition of that? And does it make sense for a black person specifically and non-whites in general to tie themselves to parties that are based on concepts of whiteness? Not to get into that too much, but you know, I don't know if you was watching John Brennan, the former CIA director. I think they had, I was showing DC, I think they had Lieutenant General Stewart, African American gentleman. They had they had Bernie Sanders and some other folks come out to talk about
Black male dedicated to the system of racism, white supremacy, full dedication, hook, line, and sinker.
Just as much as I am. But so you got him. You have I know they had the FBI. I don't know if it was the former FBI. I know it's not the current FBI. They don't have an FBI director at this point. They haven't named anybody, I don't think. But I wasn't the former FBI director. I forget. But anyway, I just had a bunch of politicians and people who control NSA, FBI, CIA, just to keep it simple. I know that's not exactly correct. I can't remember all the names that off the top of my head right now. But I was just thinking, it was just fascinating watching them deliver their speeches, them talking to these subcommittees, and they were talking to the Intelligence Committee, one scenario, or another scenario. They were coming out speaking against, President Trump's one of his, the guy who does the budgets, and who knows how much work he does with Paul Ryan or whatever, but you know, they were coming out speaking about stuff, and I was thinking to myself, you know, are we paying attention to these things, you know, and is that something you should pay attention to, you know, I know we only got about 15-20 minutes left, but is that something that we should pay attention to? Is it important? Is it a real thing? You know, are these mostly white people? And the reason I always tell people they should watch some of this stuff is to look who's there. You're going to pretty much see 95, 98, 99, or 100% of white people. As so-called diverse, you know, that word is nonsense, but a so-called diverse nation, a so-called nation that claims that it don't identify color. But anyway, every time I turn on everything, I'm talking about C-SPAN and other stations where you're not getting reported news. You're getting them speaking directly, regardless. And I know she had mentioned about what your open committees, closed committees, the stuff that's happening that you don't know about versus the stuff they actually have to come out and talk about. My point in saying all that is that, do we feel like it's a privilege, even though we are non-white, one, that they come out and tell us anything, that you can watch it? What does that mean? Do y'all think that it's a real thing? Is this an event where, like I was saying before, my grandmother is going to lose her benefits? She's going to be like, so currency, money, paper, she's going to lose her benefits. She's going to lose access to things, which is a real physical, actual thing, not a conspiracy, not the Bilderberg Group, not all the tricks and things that I'm told that these folks do to convince me of things. She ain't gonna be able to eat. How do I make that make sense? Is that a good question to ask? You know, they're talking about cutting. They said $1-2 trillion in the budget, which is probably most going to impact non-white, specifically black, and I'm only really concerned about us, obviously. But what is it going to do for us? I can't be concerned about this whole, obviously, everybody on the planet. But what are they going to directly do for us? How are they going to impact us? Are we going to see increases in prison population? Are we going to see increases in violence? They say there's a direct correlation between squeezing, taking out resources, and poverty and violence, and you know, food pantries not having food to feed people, et cetera, et cetera. You know, the federal government giving states back more rights, and that's a whole another conversation, obviously, but individual states, so now depending on which state you live in, which county you live in, which city you live in, which town you live in, which district you live in, which neighborhood you live in, resources, right? So the reality is that I can't pretend to say we have something, so I'll put that to the side, right? Facts are, she's by herself. She doesn't have anything. You know, she has a little bit of something coming in. And these people are saying, you know what? Cut them again. Her impact, her loss of her house, her loss of her benefit. Now she's on the street struggling. But anyway, I just wanted to get y'all thoughts and opinions around. I know we don't have much time to touch on it, but I did want to mention it on the call. And that's my final comments, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, it does make you wonder how much of what you see on TV is pomp and circumstance, you know, just a dog and pony show, a circus. Because you do have mention of discussing things in closed session, for instance. So, you know, how much of that is just put out there to continue to have people believe that they have a transparent government where everything is being put out and open for people to partake in or digest if they so wish to. I don't think most people sit there and watch C-SPAN or listen to it even if they were given a chance to do so, which is interesting in itself. You know, just rather catch news snippets or two-minute, one-minute clips here and there and then get on with it. You know, that's all I need today. I don't need to sit through a whole, I'm paying devil's advocate, of course, by saying it, being sarcastic, but I don't need to sit through a whole 5-6 hour deposition or testimony and really get somewhat of a more clearer picture of what's really going on. I mean, in regards to the budget cuts, I find it funny that this is austerity. It's austerity is what it is. But they call it austerity overseas. That's all you hear. Austerity this, austerity that. You got to cut the budget. You got to balance the budget. But this is austerity measures that's going on here. That's exactly what's going on. But they won't, and that's what I mean with the language thing, they won't tie certain terms to certain concepts, certain things that they have created for public digestion. The language drives it, and then it's shored up by people's beliefs. So they work hand in hand, and then it just propagates and further supports the system. You know, as long as I got one man, one vote, then even if the government, quote unquote, does something that I disagree with, or, you know, is out of control or ridiculous, then I can somehow go back to my couch and watch it on TV and feel some kind of guilt within myself, whether consciously or subconsciously, that I had a hand in this, in the foolishness. Somehow I had a hand in it because this is a democracy. And, you know, I pulled the lever, I pressed the button, I voted for this person, I didn't vote for that person. So, you know, fair is fair, you know, democracy, majority rules. I may not have voted for this individual, but I voted. So I was granted the ability to do so, which in my mind means that I do have a measure of freedom and I do have a measure of say-so. And who cares? I mean, next time around, you know, the next election in November, whatever it may be, I'll just you know, vote another way, or we'll just vote them out of office and try again. And I've said this long before Trump made it as far as he did, is that Trump is the white man's Obama. So he was installed, because first things first, people gotta understand, you're not getting anywhere in this country in politics without financial backing. So who's putting up the money for you to get where you are? The average Joe Smo doesn't have the funds to do it. So first of all, you automatically are excluded based on that, and you're vetted. Secondly, you're not put in that position to even run unless you've been vetted and financed. So to sit there and think that Trump is going to do what you want him to do when he is not, he's not obligated to you in that way, is foolish. But it's just interesting to see how people think that, and I think you're starting to see cracks in the foundation as far as people thinking that, and maybe even white people, so-called white people, I don't know. We'll see as it continues to progress, but maybe they, you know, we see some pushback with the affordable health care, what have you. They don't want it taken away, but these are some people who voted for him and they want jobs back. We'll see how many of these things actually come to fruition. And if they don't, what it leads to, because I'd just be interested to see who are they going to run against Trump in the next election if he makes it that far. And I see, what I see also, which is troubling, is that people are actually buying back into the mainstream media based on the fact that every day there's something coming out of the so-called White House. And is that real? Is this stuff coming out of the White House, these so-called leaks, are these, I mean, you're talking about a large empire that can do a lot of things simultaneously, whether it's military, economically. If they can't control leaks coming out of the government, it's highly suspicious. So anyway, those are my closing statements.
Well, like always, the system of racism, white supremacy, you know, it does what it does, and you know, I think of it almost like a web now, a web that has been cast upon different people, and the media has a very, very illuminating effect because it programs without us actually thinking about it. And they have actually done studies where TVs and listening to certain types of entertainment or kind of programming or even voices has a hypnotic effect on people. And depending on how you view life and what your perception is as far as like how life is, this can have an adverse effect on victims, especially victims that are basically affected the most by racism, white supremacy, and that's, you know, the areas of activity that we call entertainment, the areas of activity that we call economics, and the areas of activity that we call education, you know. Then there's labor, law, sex, and war. But you know, what I would like to close with is something that I would like for victims of racism to think about. Just think about what the system needs to survive. Think about that part. What makes people move and what makes people do certain things at the end of the day? And where does that come from? What generated that movement? And I think when you get down to what is basically the reasons why you have the thoughts that you have, the so-called dreams that you have, your whole thought about what a success is, I would just implore you to start to question some of these things, and not in a bad way. Think of it as a way of trying to open up your mindset on the reason why I do things. How is this connected to the system of racism, white supremacy? And this is especially for the people that think about this particular problem, and which I believe is the main problem on this planet, because it has its ties to the beginning of what we call the free labor in this particular part of the world, which is still existing through prison plantations that they have all over this particular landmass that they call the U.S. of A. So to still have this going on in the present time, and that we do not attack this vehemently, especially us being victims of racism, when we know most of our relatives have been locked up or in jail or incarcerated, whether we are that person or not, and then we still choose to blame other victims of racism. I just ask that we really take a deeper look at what's going on with us. Take a deeper look and see what's going on with us when we think that, you know, taking black women off of EBT, welfare, and all this is going to so-called help the so-called black community. Think about the reason why white people are doing it. And the reason why white people are doing it is not to basically benefit black people. Just think about that. And think about how there's no solutions that are coming from us. And that if you really think that this is going to be beneficial, and that these children that are left with these mothers that are struggling, and some of them are struggling mentally also, I do understand that. Some of them have taken advantage of the system, I understand that also. But there is an effect. There are children involved. There are other families involved. These are things that we did not start. This has been done since the beginning of the advent of end of slavery. So the mental toll that has taken effect here in this country is something that is destined to happen. This is of their particular design. This is not black people's fault. I repeat, this is not black people's fault. And one of the things that we do a disservice of is letting white people off the hook. Stop blaming black people for our condition. It is not our fault. And these are the final thoughts. We are the Code Breakers. I'm D.
It's true.
Until next time, peace.